Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents.
Donald Trump was a stain on our country.
I am someone's daughter, too.
That's what I'm talking about.
So help me God. Congratulations, Mr. President.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
Mr. Vice President, I'm speaking.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Sammy Sage.
I'm Brian Russell Smith.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Happy Monday. Do we have a case of the Mondays today?
Absolutely. The weather's not helping, although who cares about the weather? This is a podcast and not everyone lives in New York.
That's true.
Damn. Harsh on yourself.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you're projecting towards some other podcasters right now. Did you hear someone talk about their location and were like, how dare they?
No, I actually haven't listened to any podcasts this morning.
No, because I do that too.
You've just been scrolling the gram. What about mm-hmm. you guys?
I literally went to bed at 9:30 last night, so I woke up at 5:30. So I've just been here. I feel like I'm like ready for my afternoon snack.
Yeah.
It's 11.
It's 11. It is 11 a.m. So first of all, to start off, I think last Wednesday or Thursday, we asked our listeners for some feedback about just how they listen to the show and what they want from it in the future, just to help us for planning. And I got so many messages that were like way kinder and generous than I even expected to, like in addition to telling us why you wanted to keep it daily or not, you told us why. And it was super helpful. A lot of the feedback was great. I got really specific feedback about, you know, how to make the episodes more productive for you day to day if we continue doing that. And yeah, I think we got a lot of intel to have some started on some really exciting plans for the future, I think.
Mm-hmm. We are very excited. We love the future. we hope that there's less carbon in the air in the future, though.
So. We do. I heard there's a fifth ocean.
Oh,
yeah, there's a fifth ocean. Yeah, the National Geographic declared that there is now a fifth ocean. It's called the Southern Ocean. Apparently, scientists have like already been like operating under the idea that there's five oceans. They just haven't let anybody know yet until recently. Mm-hmm. But it's apparently a very important ocean because it regulates the climate, which, you know, again, the future.
The ocean. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So before we get started on today's show, I feel like I say this every weekend, but especially this weekend felt like real normal vibes. People, I was mm-hmm. in a crowd. It was mm-hmm. intense. So based on that, I'm curious, what is the habit that you formed during the pandemic or practice that we all had to start doing during the pandemic that you're finding it hardest to get rid of or stop doing or just get rid of the impulse? What can't you let go yet?
I think that I actually think it's not necessarily like one thing, but it's that my life is so much more home-based now, whereas my life used to be out-based. Like I would leave the house in the morning every day and then mostly and then come home later. And it mm-hmm. wouldn't be such like a crazy thing to do, like to go to multiple destinations in one day.
Yeah.
And now yeah. my life is so much more home-based with like the out being the, you know, yeah. less common thing.
Yeah.
I didn't think about it that way. And that like social distancing was part of that practice and like part of how we scheduled our lives. And it's very strange to like plan without that. I don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I can't stop social distancing.
Yes.
I'm more like focused on trying not to do things that I did before the pandemic that I realized I didn't like about that I used to do. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like,
what's an example?
Like saying no to everything. Like I literally would never like call people or like go places, you know? And
I feel
and
that.
Also, I, you know, like going out in social settings and then like finding like only one person to talk to and standing on the side. That's another thing that I would do a lot. And or like standing outside or something while everyone's inside. Like
yeah.
I want to be like, I need to talk to multiple people and make rounds. I need to be more, I'm trying to be a social person that I wasn't. before.
Right. It still doesn't feel totally normal yet. Like, even if, you know, you're doing a normal thing and you're like engaged in normal life for like several hours at a time, there's still this like lingering, I can't explain it. Like, my body knows that it just went through something for you.
Yeah.
Like,
totally.
And that's still that there's like this, it's like almost an anchor that's sort of like having an anchor on my joy. I can't explain.
No, it does. It feels like one of those, like, it feels like it's tied around our ankles. It's like every time you try to run, it sort of like, it pulls you back. And it's not a rational thing. It's just like, it's a psychic thing. Just like, oh no, not yet. Not yet.
Well,
that's,
I think,
not
like
right.
I think your body knows that it stayed home for a year.
Yeah.
And that it like, was and that was out of self-preservation.
Danger. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's much easier to develop habits versus breaking habits. So we've all have these new habits from the past year. And it's even like I've been to two events now where they've only allowed people who have been vaccinated, and they're packed, you know, and people are everywhere maskless. And it's like, it is, you're in and out of it. It's like, oh, this is fun. Oh, this is weird. Oh, this is fun. Oh, this is weird.
Yeah.
And it's not always like the ways you're in and out are not always rational. Like, I went to a wedding this weekend where you had to be vaccinated to go. And it was, you would see people, you know, everybody goes on the school, on the shuttle with their mask, and then they take it down to talk and they put it up for a second. It's like, none of that is actually protecting you. And then people would, I noticed that like everybody was dancing in big crowds, but people were still socializing in very like small groups with people they already knew. So it's like, you can get swept up in a moment, but I, the way that we're doing it, like nobody was doing anything rational to protect themselves, but it was all just instinct.
Yeah.
Right. There's also, okay, this is, I think, the feeling that is now here. There's, while you're doing something normal, you do remember like, oh, this, there was a time when I couldn't do this, that never when you went to like a concert or a wedding,
right,
were you like, could you imagine a world where that would not be possible? Mm-hmm. And now when I do those things, I feel like, oh my God, like this isn't always possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
totally.
That's weird. That's
everything,
definitely that's,
weird. For that reason, everything is really trippy and exhausting.
Yeah.
Yes, trippy like, and exhausting. Put that on a shirt.
Yeah, trippy and exhausting.
Episode title.
Yeah, because everything is trippy and exhausting. I was like at dinner and I was just like looking around at everyone. I was like, wow, everyone here has just lived through a pandemic.
Like, oh my God. Like, right. And then you could get really kind of, you know, dark. Right, then you could be a little bit dark and you'd be like, I wonder if they lost their job or like someone in their life. And it's like, whoa, everyone did this. Everyone, yeah, the whole
totally.
World.
I'm sure, maybe not everywhere, but there was already such a like sense of like camaraderie. Like, New Yorkers are nice to each other. I don't care what people from out, like they are, but it's even more now because this city was hit so hard. I think there is like a little bit more gentleness with each other than even before. Also, after watching In the Heights, I'm just in love with everybody. So, yeah, after the wedding, I was like, I know I don't have to get tested this week, but I think I have. It's so weird. I just can't. I was like, it was so strange to be able to go and not get tested before and to come back and not be like, I need to quarantine until I have a negative result, even though I think I probably will anyway. But
what?
Baby steps.
Oh my gosh.
I probably won't bother.
Everyone was vaccinated at the wedding.
Everybody was vaccinated. And, I didn't get that close to that many people.
Wasn't
like
it
I
outside?
Said, it was all outside. Yeah. Nothing was actually completely inside. Yeah.
Yeah.
Me and Sammy both did the same hand.
Yeah. We're like, you did like a, you're crazy.
Yeah.
I know. But isn't that amazing? Like, I can't believe it.
It's amazing and terrifying. And it's not like a pure blissful joy. It's like a, oh,
right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's good timing for today's headlines because let's get ourselves out of this current moment. I'm a little tired of it. And let's go back to 2017.
Great. Even better.
Even better. 2017. So the news cycle, this sort of end of last week and weekend has had real 2017 energy to it. There's been headlines swirling about Trump's Justice Department, his personal counsel, sketchy subpoenas, names that we haven't heard for a while that are coming back to chat. So what does it all mean? I know I was seeing all of these and it took me this morning sitting down with it to sort of figure out what this all means, what it's telling us about that period. And I think taken together, it gives us a lot of insight into how the Trump administration handled that early flurry of leaks in its administration. We remember as soon as Trump took office that we started seeing near daily scoops on potential corruption within his campaign, of course, and his budding administration. And now, years later, we have some more intel on some of the unprecedented steps they took to suppress embarrassing or implicating information. So let's start with the media. The Trump administration secretly seized records from journalists at the New York Times, CNN, and the Washington Post. They did this to investigate a leak. Basically, everything we're going to talk about is what I think is their paranoia about leaks, as well as their ability to use that to sort of claim things could have been classified to actually get the records that they just want in order to hurt their enemies. So they were able to get these records from the media to investigate said leaks, to figure out who was sharing White House information, including some classified, with these reporters. So why do we know this now? It's because in this case with the media, it's because the Biden Justice Department chose to disclose it to the publications. I guess Merrick Garland got in there and was going through the papers and they were like, oh shit, I'm curious whose job it was to like make this phone call, to just call CNN and be like, I got to tell you something. I hope you weren't weird in your emails.
Oh my God. I totally would. I'm trying to imagine myself making that call. Like, I could not convey the information calmly.
Like, no, like, did they have to draw straws? Yeah. Like, I truly feel bad for that person that had to make that phone call. But I actually, to be clear, based on my understanding of all of this, none of the records include the content of like emails and phone calls. I mean, journalists are always recording their phone calls, so I guess you could obtain that, even though in some cases the Trump administration did try to obtain this, but it was mostly like metadata, like lists of who people were emailing, who they were calling, and when. And you can obviously derive a ton of information from that. That's why they tried so hard to get it.
I would feel flattered and feel very important if I got that call. And they were like, they tapped me, was like, oh wow, I'm important. Like, I'm a little hurt that we weren't targeted.
I know. I was disappointed to see that when, because we'll talk about Eric Swalwell, that when they took his records was long before he was a friend of, he was a friend of Sup.
Oh, damn.
I know. So specifically what they were looking for from New York Times journalists was an investigation into James Comey and whether or not he had leaked classified information. But it's likely allowed the administration insight into like all avenues journalists were investing at the time. Like I said, you get a list. So if you see, you're asking to, you know, on this day, maybe they talked to Comey. So give us the list of who they talked to that day. Of course, you could probably track down lots of other leads that those journalists were pursuing. So it's not entirely uncommon for administrations led by all parties to use their Justice Department to hunt down and prosecute leaks. It's a fine case to be made that leaks are damaging, even though there are a lot of people that feel strongly that there should be even more transparency. I would say that that's something that like Democratic presidents are not great about with their DOJs either. Like all Justice Departments could probably use more transparency. But the Obama administration tried to make it easier for publications to fight court orders, but those protections were loosened under Trump's, and investigation into leaks more than tripled in his first year in office. So not surprising, but when you hear that they were looking at these journalists' emails during the time that they were reporting on really serious stuff, it's pretty intense.
Well, it's also like Trump wanted to find the leakers because they were leaking about the investigation into him and his potential collusion, haven't used that word in a few months, with Russia. And also, I bet the Trump administration was happy that they had the excuse to look into leaks, because does it seem like he really is someone who wouldn't want to have complete tabs on like anyone he could?
Totally.
Like, I feel like he was like, oh, great, we can use this like potential leak thing to just monitor everybody who we want to monitor.
Yeah. And I think he just says a bunch of shit and people just do it, and he just like makes sure they do it. And he's probably like, you know what I mean? Like, he just has always done whatever, literally what he wanted for his whole life. So he's just like, yeah, let's do that.
Donald Trump didn't arrive like, I want to make sure to preserve the integrity of the Justice Department. Yeah. Like, he was like, leaks sound like a way that we can do this under some guise of legitimacy.
Yeah, he's like, this is my Justice Department. You're all my lawyers now.
Yes, exactly. So those hunt for leaks did not stop with the media. Prosecutors also subpoenaed Apple for data from the accounts of at least two Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell, who we remember were definitely foes of Trump. They also pursued records of aides and family members, including at least one minor. So members of the House Intelligence Committee obviously have access to the nation's security secrets, and a minor's data was obtained because the Trump Justice Department thought maybe the congressmen were sharing the nation's secrets on their children's phones. I'm going to assume this isn't Swalwell's kids because they're tiny. It's just like on their like iPads, like, doing it through like games for toddlers.
However, Adam Schiff's kids are a little older.
Yeah. Do you know Swallow's having another one?
Oh.
Yeah, they're having a third. Yay. Congrats, Brittany. We'll have to send them some onesies.
Definitely.
Yes. We'll wait a little while, though. I'm sure they're feeling like they want to have some privacy after this. Again, the subjects of these investigations were just made aware of them after a gag order on Apple expired. These investigations were led by Jeff Sessions, and this time they were specifically looking for sources behind news media reports about contacts between Trump associates and Russia. So what happened here? Prosecutors found no evidence of leaks on behalf of Schiff or Swalwell, obviously. Even Trump's own prosecutors felt this was a dead end and considered closing the inquiry when Sessions was there. But then Bill Barr arrived, and he basically revived these investigations and brought his allies in to lead them. He brought in a prosecutor from New Jersey who was focused on gang and healthcare fraud investigations. I didn't know how those are related. I didn't know you could specialize in both, but maybe. I mean, insurance, health insurance companies do seem like gangs.
they just wanted someone who was available, willing.
Mm-hmm.
I read that. I was like, you know what? That probably was announced on a day, because that's crazy. But that probably broke on a day where there were 10 other insane things happening. So here we are 4 years later where I'm like, they brought in a gang prosecutor to look into Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell. Like, oh, little Adam Schiff, real threatening.
Maybe he was the type of gang prosecutor who's like for the take. You know, like the guy in Sopranos who would meet Tony near like the junkyard.
Mm-hmm. Right,
exactly.
Could be in like that realm.
Yeah. So even the members of the Justice Department, Bill Barr's Justice Department, felt it was a dead end. And they even felt like it was politically motivated and that this was just personal to Donald Trump, because it's basically unheard of to subpoena records from members of Congress and staff outside of a straight up corruption investigation. So to even consider pursuing a case after there's nothing there is crazy. Bill Barr apparently did tell Trump there was no case to be made against James Comey, which apparently made Trump furious, and subsequent investigations into Comey remained open.
I'm sure you've swiped past lots of custom beauty brands over the years, customized this and personalized that, all promising to fix my hair and skin insecurities. It's easy to be skeptical, but when Pros says custom, they actually mean it. Your formula literally could not exist without you. Since I started using Pros, I've noticed consistently healthy hair, even with all I put it through with heat tools and hairsprays to get this pompadour sky high. It smells great, looks fancy on the shelf, and it has my name right on it. Each and every bottle of Pros custom hair and skincare is made to order and personalized with a unique brand of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs. Their in-depth consultation analyzes over 80 factors for a complete view of your life and beauty goals. Pros covers everything from your concerns to diet, exercise, and stress levels to uncover what's impacting your hair and skin health. Next, they'll recommend a full routine of truly personalized products, which were only produced after I placed my order. Nothing is pre-mixed. Nothing is off the shelf. But don't just take my word for it. In a third-party, double-blind, dermatologist-supervised, controlled clinical study, Pros proved that personalization works better than off-the-shelf alternatives. Pros is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering our listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. They're giving you 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/feverdream. That's PROSE.com/feverdream for your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. pros.com/feverdream. Hey, American Fever Dream listeners, I'm here to tell you that there is no reason to panic the next time you're searching for the perfect gift. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy. Gift Mode on Etsy is here to take the stress out of gifting so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion. It's easy. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like. And Gift Mode instantly gives you curated gift ideas based on hundreds of personas. Now it is simple to find gifts made by independent sellers for all the people in your life. So whether you need a Mother's Day gift for the quilter or a birthday present for the vintage hunter, there is something for everyone on Etsy. And like I told you guys before, I got my wedding bands on Etsy. I was able to meet with a creative, independent artist. They took my vision into reality, and now my wife and I have custom wedding bands that we absolutely love. A gifting moment is always just around the corner, whether it's a birthday, an anniversary, a holiday, or even just a day to say thank you. Gift Mode on Etsy has you covered. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Try Gift Mode on Etsy now.
Lastly here, the last headline on this is that not even Trump's own lawyers were spared from subpoenas. So this one we have fewer details about, but it's just even crazier. In 2018, the Trump administration subpoenaed records, again from Apple. Everybody's an iPhone user here, mm-hmm. for its own White House counsel.
This is a horrible ad for Apple.
Really is. You just go to Apple and it's like, can we have the records? And it's like, sure, here you go.
Right.
That's so funny. So McGahn was also top counsel for Trump's 2016 campaign. We don't know what this involved, but it could like literally be anything. We know that McGahn was the one that I think McGahn was instructed to fire Mueller and said, no, I'll leave before I do that. And so McGahn had his hands in all of this. So it could be any number of things. So how does this feel? Is this nostalgic?
It's so obvious. We knew this was happening. It just wasn't documented or confirmed. And McGahn, like, it's really crazy, like, why someone like that wouldn't just have turned on him so much earlier. I know.
It is true. Yeah.
Well, he didn't know until a month ago.
Maybe you don't technically know, yeah. but like, you know, well, you know that he would have done it.
Yeah, I just think it's so hilarious that he was furious that they couldn't James Comey didn't leak anything, or that they weren't right. finding anything. It's like, why are you mad about it? Like, he wanted them right, to be totally. Leaking stuff.
Exactly, because like Sammy said, like, that's the only avenue they had to actually keep them quiet or suppress what other things that they could say or find out what they were doing was through leaks. So without that.
If he actually had been leaking things, like, I swear there would have been a guillotine, like, brought out. Like, like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, totally. This is what he'll do for people who are, like, so upstanding that they make, like, a ridiculous press conference to try to, like, level the playing field. If, like, if that's what Trump does to these types of people, imagine right. if someone actually was doing the things that he... Yeah. was accusing them of.
That's why it's always just so stunning how loyal they are to him. Like, Trump is, as we know, raising money for Republicans to challenge sitting members of Congress who kept him in office that whole time. Mm-hmm. There's no loyalty whatsoever.
And it's like, he is so paranoid the entire time.
Yeah.
He was like so paranoid that everyone was out to get him all the time. Like, what a state to live in.
Yeah, paranoid president is a dangerous president for sure.
Yes. And I think it's a good reminder of how he treated the Justice Department as his own personal law firm.
Yeah. What's annoying is that we have to talk about this.
I know. So explain why we do have to talk about it, because I agree.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We have to talk about this because Trump was a failed, of course he failed at this too. He was a failed authoritarian. Authoritarians can fail and then they can succeed later. So mm-hmm. any sort of like evidence where you see that he completely violated like the norms or the use of an institution, that needs to be widely known. But mm-hmm. then it's sort of like, okay, well, there's like all those crazy people who are going to vote for him anyway. So
I know, right.
whatever. But I do think there is, of course, there's importance in putting things on the historical record, regardless of whether like Trump becomes a successful authoritarian ever. This needs to be documented and known about, that this is what he did, so that mm-hmm. in the future, it can be judged accurately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, maybe next time Don McGahn won't be his lawyer, so he'll be a little bit less powerful. I'm all for his allies
probably
learning.
Be someone worse.
That's mm-hmm. that's an excellent point.
That's the thing. It's like Don McGahn was like, the reason he was spying on him was because Trump obviously got a read that he wasn't going to just like do whatever he said. And that was 4 years ago now.
Without Don McGahn, Trump had his second impeachment lawyers, who we remember were trash.
Mm-hmm. Right. I forgot about
one of
those.
Them cried.
Those were God, those were so bad.
They were so bad.
But yeah, like that was 4 years ago. So if someone like Don McGahn can't like survive in that climate.
Yeah. It's also, you know, think about Bill Barr. He was attorney general years ago. And had there been like we have to also like widen the scope of the people who Trump worked with to remember mm-hmm. them too. Yes. And also be like 10 years from now, whatever, whenever, I don't know. I mean, Bill Barr and Jeff Sessions are both so old. So I really don't, I don't foresee 10 years in their futures, but one other awful person, you know what I mean? We'd be like, oh wait, no, that's the
worse
guy.
Worse than Bill Barr. Bill Barr yeah. knew after the insurrection to like get out of Dodge. Like he knew this is the time to like step down. I don't want to be part of this. I don't want my name on it. Bill yeah. Barr is like at least smart enough to like play the fence there. Same with Mitch McConnell with his like, the president's horrible speech, but then voting to keep him. Mm-hmm. Like they, there are some people who at least know that they have to present some faithfulness to the institutions. But now the people who, if there's a future Trump run, the people who are going to be involved with him, he would never pick Bill Barr again. He would never pick like Don McGahn. He's going like My Pillow Man. Like Sidney Powell, My Pillow Man. Rudy. Mm-hmm. Like there's no
kooks and crackpots.
Yes. Kooks. Literal
and,
kooks.
And they'll still have the support of the people. Like, as we see, like, you're listing people like Bill Barr and Dom again, who I think are slightly less politically motivated and more like, be like, well, fuck that guy. I'm not helping him again because mm-hmm. they're not Mitch McConnell. They're not people that, like, need him to win elections. But you're right. He'll still go to the next kookiest. And, like, the effectiveness, what Trump wants is to rally up his base. So the effectiveness of his legal counsel doesn't really matter. Right. Like, it's never really matter. It's never... Maybe he has, I bet he's had good, I bet Dom McGahn was the best lawyer he had, and now he's not going to have him anymore.
Yeah, and you have to realize, like, we traded people like Paul Ryan in for Marjorie Taylor Greene's.
Yeah.
So, like, those were the people enabling him first.
Yeah.
And now we have, like, mm-hmm. a different level of human being.
I'm in that spot. Well, I'm hoping that makes for like the most brutal Republican primary ever. But we have like those, like if like hopefully there'll be like the factions will have to fight it out.
Well, there's no more Republicans that are normal. So
That's why the time, the clock is ticking for us to pass HR1 because these districts are going to be redrawn very soon. And then, I mean, the district that Marjorie Taylor Greene is in is not winnable for a Democrat by design. And these people will keep getting squeezed their districts into echo chambers. And like we said, that's why like the effectiveness of Trump's legal counsel does not matter. He just needs to continue to rally his base. So as like, my instinct is to be happy that he is losing allies, but like the power of his allies has never really been, by the end, he still didn't need, it's like, it's what got him into power, but he didn't need it to get a bunch of people to like attack the Capitol. Yeah.
Thank you for reminding me of that second impeachment lawyer. I'm going to go watch some videos.
There are some.
I know.
Like, I need to see him freaking out. That was so funny. Like, it's also upsetting.
Crazy.
Vanderveen?
Yeah.
It's the worst public theater I've ever seen.
No.
Do you remember the one for Democrats who arrived and his, instead of a briefcase? Oh, no, he was for Republicans. Instead of a briefcase, he had a Fresh Direct bag.
Yes. Oh, my God.
There were some moments that we really should revisit, like outside of the haze and mania of just not knowing if it would ever end.
You know what? Anyone would be interested in that. Maybe we could do some like special episodes. DM us, DM Amanda, DM the Betches Up, preferably Amanda or me because one of us individually would be more likely to see it. If you are interested in like going back, revisiting deep dives, doing any sort of like special investigations that like you'd be interested in, we will work on those.
Definitely. Sounds good.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
So now we obviously have a different Justice Department, and people are a little bit disappointed by how they have handled some of these because they have played a role. I mean, the DOJ has played a role in basically giving Trump a hand in some of these respects and some of these lingering issues. So for one, the Department of Justice, right now run by Merrick Garland, it sought to extend some of these gag orders on investigations into Trump era leaks. So based a lot of these information, it was obtained by either Apple or wherever they got it from, the media companies. And then the Trump administration kept going to court asking for the gag orders to be continued. So they didn't just one time want the records. They wanted it to continue to be secret. And for some reason, the DOJ is continuing to advocate for that. It's also refusing to release certain memos kept private by Bill Barr. And on a slightly unrelated note, Merrick Garland's DOJ filed a brief defending Trump from a defamation lawsuit filed last year by E. Jean Carroll. She is, of course, the advice columnist who accused Trump of raping her during the 1990s. So the DOJ always tries to stay as consistent as possible from administration to administration. The point is not to sway wildly from side to side in order for the DOJ to maintain credibility across the court system. But as I'm seeing this, I'm asking myself, you know, when you had one administration expand the window of what was possible so much, when does consistency become complicity? Isn't this exactly what we didn't want Trump? What we said on this podcast a lot was that he's changing the norms. And if he moves, it's like Republicans have changed where the center is. And if you insist on consistency when the Overton window has like expanded so much, I think you fall into some like unethical territory.
Yeah, I mean, there's so few people like Merrick Garland around anymore. But like James Comey would fit in this in this category of people who are just like, rules and norms above all. And when they're put in the position to be the one to decide whether they're going to be the one who like pushes it a little bit more actively in one direction, or if they just sort of like do the most like basic nonpartisan passive thing, that's what they're going to choose.
And but, I think I should have noted that preserving presidential power or letting the president have a lot of leeway in a lot of ways is a norm. It's a norm that Trump took exceedingly far, but it has always been a norm and one that clearly Garland is trying to negotiate now.
Right. Just because Mitch McConnell wouldn't confirm Merrick Garland as Supreme Court Justice under Obama does not make him like this progressive activist attorney who's like, actually, I think the rhetoric around the time was that Merrick Garland is so centrist that it was insane that Mitch McConnell wouldn't confirm him because of how like centrist he was. Mm-hmm. So he's not gonna like.
We're talking about a man that Obama thought would be acceptable to Mitch McConnell. So
exactly,
it's not necessarily like progressive hero status, even though his background is he's very accomplished and has done a lot of really cool things. Yeah, he's not like the progressive caucus isn't like, go get him, Merrick.
Right.
Yeah, it's one of those things where because it was Obama's thing and everyone hates Mitch McConnell, people are like excited. Also, he's a great name. Merrick Garland, that just like rolls off the tongue sweetly.
Yeah. Right. Well, I know a lot of, what people were talking about this weekend was maybe charges anyone? charges for anyone? There did seem like additional exploration to some of these things could give us more insight into that word we haven't heard for a while, obstruction. Did Trump obstruct the investigation by telling McGahn to fire Mueller? I mean, that's the open question, right? That's been the open question from the Mueller investigation. What, Sammy, to close, what utility, why do you think it's important we have an answer?
They're not just an answer, consequences. Like, there need to actually be consequences or they're going to keep doing it. They're going to still try to do it even if there are consequences. But at least if there is a consequence, you then have a legal precedent. And somebody, if you happen to get the right person into a role where they're making a decision that will hopefully preserve democracy, they can then follow that norm of accountability. But there's literally nothing. Like, nothing. It's literally just fine. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so upsetting and why I actually am concerned. And I think that I don't understand how the country lasts as a democracy with the inputs we have now of like nothing happening. The only way it could happen is if we actually flip the Senate, 50 like 53 votes. Fuck you, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Like, We actually need like 53, 54 senators. And then they need to start just passing things. The progressive agenda, the Green New Deal, infrastructure. Like the voting, all of these things. Policing, everything.
DC statehood. The Senate isn't made up correctly. The 50 people do not represent 50% of the country. And it's the Democrats who are losing out on that because of New York and California especially. But they were saying that if this, you know, continues the way it is, in 2040, it'll be 30% of the country will be represented by 70% of the Senate and vice versa. So it's only going to get worse.
And then what does the country look like at that point? Because like the Supreme Court has been conservative for so long. Like, what are the actual laws in that country?
That's a country of minority rule, of complete minority rule. Yeah. And I mean, I've DC statehood is, it's as we're sort of talking about ways to actually make this more of a democracy. It's like, I don't want to be inconsistent and like give away that my main objective is to make our democracy more even, but it's like you end the filibuster for HR 1 or do DC statehood. Either one will have an impact, but we got to do one. Like, I don't know if now we start talking to maybe Joe Manchin will have to pay. Can we like, you know, make him not have to make statehood good for his houseboat taxes? I don't know. Can we do something?
Right. If there is a DC state, you do not have to pay taxes.
Yeah, but I'm interested in seeing more activity around DC statehood because it is another way to, add two senators and make the representation in this country a little bit more proportional to the policies people want to see.
Yeah, it's not like they're represented at all right now. So, you know, sometimes I just wonder if like the country is too physically large.
I like, think about this all the time.
Yeah, I think about this all the time.
Other countries, other successful countries are not this big.
Right, like there's too much landmass and too many distinct cultures and people within it that it's kind of like irreconcilable. And I suppose this is our punishment, or not our, because none of us did this, but one's
the colonizers,
founders' punishment for taking all the land.
Right. Like, I bet somebody,
you didn't need all of it. You didn't need all of it.
Right.
And now
here
you're
you
fucked.
Go.
And now your country's fucked because you took too much.
Have fun with this. I bet somebody has written a very good book on that, and we will find out who they are and have them on the show.
Well, that article I sent you last week, The Four Americas, was so good. I've been thinking about that for a week now.
And that was in The Atlantic?
Yeah, that was in The Atlantic. And it's more about, like, psychologically The Four Americas, but also, like, that is affected by geography.
Yes, absolutely. That is our show today. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Sammy Sage.
I'm Brian Russell Smith.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast.
The Betches Sup Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com.
Betches.